Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And we're live, this Thursday edition of the program underway. It's the Hoosier Report. We do this each weekday, 11 a.m. right here on the Big X Sports Radio. You could also catch the replay most days here on the Big X at 3 o'clock. A lot to get to today. Indiana inches closer to a much bigger challenge against Montana State on Friday before the big showdown next Wednesday night against Marquette. Also, some recruiting news. You know, once the season gets underway, that seems to take over for a while. There can, especially a Romeo situation, or this year Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks, their recruiting can sure take some of the attention as well. We've got some Trace Jackson Davis news. It's not necessarily great news for Indiana, but it's not bad news either. We'll talk about that in the headline segment coming up in just a bit, and much more in this Thursday edition of the program. Let's set the show for you with the Honey Baked Ham guest lineup. Segment one, we have Hoosier Headlines, our news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. We'll talk about Trace Jackson Davis there. We'll update his recruitment with the latest that we know. Also, another watch list for a postseason college basketball award for Romeo Langford and Jawan Morgan. IU's been having some big visitors to practice. We know that there'll be a lot of NBA teams there to watch Romeo and maybe others. We'll talk about that. And also, the NCAA has permission, or was told by the FBI, now that the first of three federal basketball, college basketball scandal trials is complete, they are free to take the information from the trial, move on with their own internal investigations. A number of schools named in that case with violations, if that sworn testimony is proven to be true by the NCAA and their enforcement department. So we'll touch on that today in our headlines and more. Segment two, I'll be joined by Alex Bozich. Alex is with us each Thursday to talk IU basketball, and his segment is presented by CC Power Sports. And then later in the program, Matt Weaver of Pigs.com, the football writer for Pigs, will join us to look at IU Maryland very quickly later in the show. Maryland, a program that has had all sorts of things going on off the field, but still somewhat a solid football team. It's a game also that Indiana absolutely has to win if they still want the opportunity to be bowl eligible at the conclusion of the regular season. So we haven't talked a lot of football here on the show the last week or so. And of course, we're always basketball heavy, even in the smack dab middle of the off season. But we will catch up with Matt today and get you set for IU and Maryland, a home game for Hoosier football this weekend later in the program. That's the guest lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. You can mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll receive $1 off your boxed lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Hoosier Headlines, our news of the day, our top IU news and Southern Indiana sports headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. We got to start off with this. Trace Jackson Davis of Center Grove High School, IU's number one target in the class of 2019, announced yesterday. I think Jeff Rabjohns broke the story, but there have been other reports out there that confirm this. Trace Jackson Davis will not sign in the early period, which begins next Wednesday, November 14th, and runs through Wednesday, November 21st, a week-long signing period. I think a lot of people thought, and there will be others, a lot of commitments and signings during that week, but I think the common thought was is that Trace had finished his visits some time ago, his five official visits. A lot of thought that he's going to go to Indiana. He's kind of deflected a lot of that throughout the summer and throughout his recruiting process. but that he would make his decision. And a lot of people thought that decision coming up here in a week or so would be Indiana. But he says that he needs more time. The quote was, I have officially decided that I'm going to sign late and not early. I'm not ready to make my decision yet. He's considering Indiana. He's considering UCLA, Michigan State as well. He's taken official visits to all three of those schools. Indiana has just one commitment in the 2019 class. That's Indianapolis Cathedral's Armon Franklin, but of course is in with a number of players, including Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks at the very top of their wish list for 2019. I think a lot of Indiana fans, when they saw that last night, as they've seen it online, on social media, on websites, on message boards, wherever, this morning, have had a panic feel somewhat, not overboard, but somewhat, that your top target, who you thought might commit before his high school season, which, by the way, begins November 20th, when Center Grove takes on Franklin, when he decides to not commit early or sign early, I should say. I still think that he'll go to Indiana. I really do. I do think that he wants to thoroughly go through the process and not get caught up in all the fanfare and hype that surrounds being in-state and having the wrath of that IU crowd in your ear every day, I'm sure, at Center Grove High School, anywhere he goes in the Indianapolis area. And what he may or may not realize is this season, as he plays as an unsigned player, he's going to have a lot of opposing crowds, some of his own crowd probably, that are pro-IU that let him know they are pro-IU and that they hope that he signs eventually when he does make his decision with Indiana. So, you know, Trace Jackson Davis has really said a lot of different things over the course of his recruiting. There was a time where he told someone he was going to sign late, a lot like what Romeo did, and then he quickly backed off of that and said, well, I might sign before the season or I might sign by the middle of the season. Now it's back to the end of the season. We just have to wait and let it play out, see what happens. Michigan State obviously is in a position to make a push. I think they've got a pretty good team for this season. Tom Izzo has done well with players from the state of Indiana. UCLA, hard to believe that he'll go there because of the distance, but others have done it. Chris Wilkes has done it. There's a sell with weather. There's a sell with NBA-type feel. Scouts out there all the time that Steve Alford and his group have that maybe some others don't. But Corey Evans, on this same subject, Corey Evans of Rivals, actually got a quote once Trace made this announcement that he would not commit on each school, and it's kind of a standard thing. You get an update on all the final three or final five or whatever, and quote the players. Here's what Trace said about Indiana. Quote, it is kind of like Michigan State with the family thing, but at the same time, Indiana wants to lock up their borders, and they really care about their in-state guys. Coach Miller has had a big emphasis on that and has pushed that really hard, and the fans have done the same thing. They just really want me and Keon to stay in-state really bad and are doing whatever they can to make it possible. That's what Trace Jackson Davis said about Indiana here recently to Corey Evans of Rivals.com. So this is another peripheral thing to follow, and I'm sure it'll come up a lot more than normal peripheral things during a college basketball season, but Trace Jackson Davis is a big get, especially on the heels of landing Romeo Langford in the 2018 class. If Archie Miller can bounce back from that positive and land Trace Jackson Davis and then follow it up with Keon Brooks, or it looks like Keon Brooks might make his decision first and then follow that up with Trace Jackson Davis, both of those guys in the 2019 class, that is a absolutely huge statement from Archie Miller and the IU staff. If back-to-back they can lock down three of the top players Indiana has had in those classes, Romeo obviously number one, and Keon and Trace Jackson Davis obviously some form or fashion 1-2 in the Hoosier State. So two big potential recruiting classes floating out there for Indiana, but it looks like the 2019 side of things, there's going to have to be some more work done and a little time that will pass until Keon, or Trace, I should say, is ready to announce his decision. Another postseason award for Juwan Morgan and also Romeo Langford. This time it was the 50-member watch list for the 2019 Wooden Award, which is awarded annually to the top college basketball player of the season. Calbert Chaney is the only former Hoosier to win that coveted award. He did so following the 1993 season. So Juwan Morgan, he's earned his keep. He's a fourth-year player. He declared pro, came back for his final year. No surprise to see him there. And I tell you what, Romeo Langford is on about every list that you can want to be on if you're a college basketball player, even though he's a freshman that just played his first game. Really no surprise about either of those guys. Any type of postseason honor, any type of list that comes out, both those guys, Indiana's going to have not one but two representatives to most of those lists, no question about it. Also, I saw this yesterday, and we talk a lot about the NBA for Romeo and what's going on now in the background with some background checking, wanting to know more about Romeo and his off-the-court behaviors and family and what type of kid he was and how he treats people and all the things that NBA franchises who potentially could draft him in the lottery next year want to learn to go alongside of what they're learning currently about his abilities and skills on the basketball court. We know there's always NBA scouts at IU games, at a lot of Division I. I would say at most Division I, especially at the high major level college basketball games. And a lot of scouts and other NBA personnel in practices at times during the season at IU as well. I saw a tweet from the Indiana men's basketball Twitter account yesterday that was said, great to have former IUBB manager and LA Clippers president of basketball operations Lawrence Frank at practice today. And again, this was yesterday. Lawrence Frank, a former manager, now the president of operations for the Clippers. Just an example of the type of, and it had a picture of him sitting there courtside, just the example of the type of guests that are going to be in to see Romeo Langford. You're going to get normal scouts that each team has that scout for the draft and try to figure out where about their pick will be and what type of players will be available in that range of picks. And then you get some front office guys like Lawrence Frank that come by as well to check out players that they are seriously interested in. So a lot of visitors to see Romeo on a daily basis, both during games and in non-games as well. Last night, Ohio State was action. They built a 16-point lead at one point. Playing Cincinnati, by the way, a real good early season game. Their lead was cut from 16-4 in the final minute, but they were able to hold on in Cincinnati at Fifth Third Arena. It was the first on-site game between the two teams in 97 years. Ohio State goes on to win 64-56. Just an early note on Ohio State as the college basketball season gets underway. I mentioned the NCAA now has approval, permission, whatever terminology you want to use to move forward with enforcement and investigation on things that were mentioned in the first of three college basketball trials that recently completed in New York. It's going to be extremely interesting to see how all this plays out. There were so many programs mentioned, so many violations mentioned under sworn testimony by various people that participated in the trial, whether it was the attorneys, whether it was the defense, whether it was a witness. There were so many things brought to light, and Dan Wetzel had a good piece that listed a lot of the programs and what was said, at least in the court case. Now that the NCAA has the ball in their court and the permission to move forward with their own investigation for NCAA penalties, there's so many floating out there. Where do they start? Do they have the capability in their enforcement department to handle that many investigations at one time? Will they do a couple schools at a time? Will they bring in additional staff to help? Will they announce all of the penalties at one time if they do all the investigations concurrently? There are so many questions out there to see how this works. And I guess, do they take it and run with it? Do they actually enforce what was said and use the sworn testimony and have penalties for these schools? Or do they say the FBI, the college basketball case, is it? That brought to light, it would be hard to see that happen. But going to be a really interesting time to see how the NCAA handles this. Are they going to have a press conference to announce their intent and what they're going to do and how they're going to handle it. All this, of course, questions we have as college basketball officially beginning this week. So the timing of this thing is ultra interesting with the season here as well. But there are a lot of schools and a lot of coaches and a lot of people, assistant coaches and other people affiliated with college basketball and some of these schools and programs, administrations at some of the schools like Kansas, where they have had their name mentioned so many times, that have to be nervous about what the NCAA could do, how they will investigate, how soon they will investigate, how the extent to what's to which they will investigate. There are just so many questions with this, and a lot of schools named. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I think we'll have a continuous flow of information once this gets going, whenever it gets going, throughout the season. This could be a long process. And again, I think about NCAA enforcement, and then I'll move on and close this segment. We'll get to Alex. But I think about NCAA enforcement, and I'm sure that they've added people. I'm sure that department has grown. But I can remember years ago when they first really got involved in summer basketball, and they said, if you run events for AAU teams and you want college coaches to come, you've got to register through the NCAA, you've got to submit all this paperwork, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. It basically was a major report you had to put together after you hosted a tournament that college coaches were eligible to attend. And I mention this because there had to be separate entrances for college coaches, Division I coaches, and separate entrances for players and their families. That way you were hoping to limit the amount of potential bystanding, passerby-type traffic situations, because they're not supposed to talk to each other. You had to have different seating, and this is a lot of this is still true. You got to have different seating for the college coaches as you do for the players and, of course, for their families. And you got to kind of separate things the best you can in a gymnasium-type environment, which is not always easy depending on the setup, where the doors are located, what the lobby looks like. Can you send one group in this way and the players in this way? But I mention all this because the NCAA said, we're going to come out and we're going to enforce all this stuff. We're going to make sure that you've got everything labeled and that you're making sure that coaches do go in a separate entrance. Well, I think maybe in six or seven, eight summers of working tournaments, I saw an NCAA, and you don't always see them. They may just be in plain clothes, but we knew for sure they were there one or two times, and that's because there were hundreds and hundreds of tournaments going on during the live evaluation period, but only a small number of enforcement people. So that's just a small example, much less important than what's going on right now. But they couldn't enforce it. They couldn't check everything. They couldn't do their due diligence because they didn't have the staff to do it. Now that they've got all of these investigations to go through, information from the trial to go through, penalties to decide on, do they have a bigger staff? Can they handle it? Going to be really interesting to see. That's the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a break. Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, presented by CC Power Sports, is next, right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Thursday show. Thursdays gives us the opportunity to chat with Alex Bozich of InsideTheHall.com, at InsideTheHall on Twitter. And this segment each week is presented by CC Power Sports. CC Power Sports with two locations serving Indiana and Kentucky. One is in Clarksville. That's the mothership store, so to speak. They carry Indian, Victory, Slingshot, Polaris, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Honda, KTM, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki. And the Louisville store right off of Interstate 65 in southern Jefferson County, they carry Kawasaki, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Yamaha, and Suzuki. New riders, welcome. And, of course, racers, welcome at CC Power Sports. Alex, even though the season is just beginning and there's all sorts of excitement heading into Friday's game and, of course, next Wednesday as well against Marquette, Trace Jackson Davis and his announcement yesterday that he's going to wait until the late signing period, wait until the end of the high school season, it looks like, or into the spring at least, to make a decision. That's kind of taken the cake today. A lot of IU fans, I think, a little concerned that now that he's seen his final three schools up close and personal with official visits, that he's going to take a lot more time instead of signing early, starting in that period next week.
Yeah, it's definitely not expected, I don't think. For most people, just kind of based on what we've heard all summer and what kind of interviews with Trace over that period of time. But, you know, I really can't blame him. Just kind of based on his stature as a recruit, it's not like he has a certain timeline that he has to work on from different schools to either take the scholarship or not. And, you know, if you remember back to Romeo's recruitment, it was a little bit different in that, you know, the FBI stuff had all just come out. But he took his visits in the – his official visits in the fall, too, and didn't sign and waited until the spring. And so it's not necessarily, I don't think, a bad thing for IU that he's going to take more time. You know, I know that fans want to kind of get guys in the fold as soon as possible, but I don't necessarily view this as a negative in terms of IU's chances. I just view it as, you know, a kid who's making a decision that's going to be something he's going to have to live with for the rest of his life, wants to make sure he gets it right. And the more time he has to kind of see these teams play this year, maybe go to some games and kind of evaluate the teams and how the seasons that they have and kind of see how their rosters are maybe going to look like when he gets there. That sounds like kind of what he wants to do. And so it's well, like we talked about with Romeo last year, right? It's well within his right to kind of take as much time as he needs and makes it the best decision possible. So while it is a little bit surprising, I don't necessarily think it's something to be too concerned about or worried about if you're an Indiana fan. I think Indiana's done as much work as any school in this recruitment. They've done everything that they can with both him and Keon Brooks. And ultimately, you can only do so much as a coaching staff, as a program. And then it's up to the kid to decide if that's what they want to do. And we'll see what happens. You know, it doesn't sound like necessarily he's going to wait all the way until maybe how long Romeo did to commit. But even if he makes a decision in the sometime during the season or right after the season, he'll still have to wait until the late signing period to actually make it official and sign his letter of intent.
Alex, one more thing on Trace. He has at times mentioned or said, you know, I'm not committed to Indiana. I know a lot of people think that I am, but I'm not. And he's seemed to have kind of went out of his way at times to make sure. And I get this as a kid. You want to go through the process, and you don't want, just because you live closer to Bloomington than anyone else recruiting you, or just because you've been to that campus or have a connection with that coach that people can see, you don't want people to just assume that's where you're going to go. Do you think any of this delay could be a little bit about that, that, hey, I like Indiana, but I also like these other two schools, and I'm going to investigate this thing thoroughly? I'm not at all saying that he's not committing or not signing next week now because of a lot of predictions that he will. But do you think that some of that could be that, hey, I do really want to investigate this further, and this is really an open process, even though a lot of people around me think Indiana's the definite leader? You know, it's maybe not the leader, the space between schools that some of you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, you got to step back from it and look at it from his perspective. If he really did want to go through the process and, you know, everything that was written and said over the summer and the fall was, well, he's going to Indiana, he's Indiana's to lose. Kind of, if you read some of these recruiting sites, what people have said in terms of predictions, I'd be shocked if he doesn't go to Indiana. Basically insinuating that he's going to end up there. And if he really wants to have an open process and have an open mind, you know, he could be saying to himself, you know, I want to kind of take a step back and, you know, make sure this is what I really want to do, not just because what people think or what people want me to do in the state or people around me. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him, obviously, to go to IU, but he shouldn't go to IU just because, you know, it's the in-state school or it's, you know, the school that others around him want him to go to. He should go there because it's the best spot for him. And so, you know, I think it, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I, you know, with certain kids over time, I think they get some fatigue of, you know, people always writing or saying like what the kid they're going to do, or thinking that they know. And really it's only a small percentage of people, you know, the family, the close family, maybe some close friends that know exactly what's going on. And so a lot of times things get blown up out of proportion and we just assume things. And so, you know, I agree with you, Matt, kind of maybe that he wants to just kind of take a step back and look at this thing and make the best decision possible. Like, that's why I'm not really, I don't really view this as a negative in terms of IU's chances. I just view it as a kid who's making a huge decision that has time. And, you know, it's not like Indiana, Michigan State, or UCLA is going to say, hey, we don't want you now that you're going to wait. I mean, they're still going to all recruit him. So he's going to go through the process and see where he ends up.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall, presented by CC Power Sports. What do, and I don't know that the crowds will be the same as what they were for New Albany and Romeo, although him being uncommitted probably makes a little more interest. If he commits to Indiana, they'll have better ticket sales, I'm sure, it's at a lot of Center Grove games. But what mm-hmm. what's the crowd like at a lot of Center Grove games, especially the big ones like the Forum Tip-Off Classic game and maybe into the tournament if he's not committed at that point? What do the crowds look like? You think we'll see the IU gear? You think we'll hear the chants? You think the fans will take it as seriously as they did the Romeo recruitment?
Probably not as seriously because, I mean, nothing against Trace Jackson Davis. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's going to probably play in the NBA one day. But Romeo was just on another level in terms of prospect and where he kind of fits in and, you know, the history of Indiana high school basketball. And there's been very few players that have been as good as him, as productive as him. And there's just something about Romeo that naturally kind of draws people in and have people wanting to watch him. Like I said, I think Trace Jackson Davis is a terrific player. I think he'll be great wherever he goes, but I don't know that he has the same star power that Romeo does. And I don't think a lot of kids in this state, even going back to like a Gary Harris, who was a great player, he didn't have, and he's a great player in the NBA, he didn't have the same kind of appeal as Romeo. That's something I don't think we haven't seen anything like that since what, Damon Bailey, probably Eric Gordon and Greg Oden, maybe to an extent. But you know, I think obviously Center Grove is in a more IU-centric area than New Albany was. So maybe, you know, there's going to be some times when there's going to be a heavy contingent of IU fans, people wearing their gear. He'll hear some chants. But, you know, it's just, I don't, you know, Romeo mania, whatever you want to call it, I just don't think we'll see that again in the foreseeable future.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall. Your first impression of the Hoosiers? We haven't spoke with you since IU has been out on the court. We missed you last Thursday mm-hmm. because the team played Thursday night. And, of course, IU in action again earlier this week with a win over Chicago State. I'm curious your takeaways, your first impressions of this team.
Yeah, I think just from watching up close, you know, the first thing that stands out is just the length and the athleticism is a lot different than last year. That's not to say last year at times they weren't capable of taking things away in the paint and at the rim, and they didn't have good athletes because they did have some. But, you know, now just with a guy like Romeo out there and so Justin Smith, a year older, Juwan Morgan is, to me, looks in better shape than he was last year. And he looked pretty darn good last season. That was kind of just the first thing that stands out. I mean, the potential of this team defensively, I think, is really high. They obviously have some things to work on. They're nowhere near a finished product. That was kind of my first thing that stood out. And then just really impressed so far with both Romeo and Rob Tennessee. I mean, I obviously saw Romeo play a ton in high school. And, you know, I saw Rob from time to time, watched a lot of film. But for two freshman guards being in the starting lineup and how they kind of complement each other and play well together, you know, I think that Robert Finnessy is, in a lot of ways, the perfect complement to Romeo because he's not a guy who's going to, unlike Devontae Green, who we saw kind of take some ill-advised shots, I mean, I think Rob Finnessy is going to get guys the ball where they want it, where they need it. And, you know, I think he's built a pretty good rapport with Romeo on the court. I think those two guys can play well together. Now, they're both freshmen, and I think there's going to be some growing pains as the season goes along, but you know, it's really impressive, I think, that duo so far, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch and develop as the season goes along.
We're talking with Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, InsideTheHall.com and at Inside the Hall on Twitter. Alex is with us on Thursdays presented by CC Power Sports. We take a real step up as far as competition goes and learning more about this team goes with Montana State on Friday, and then obviously another huge step on Wednesday when Marquette comes to Bloomington. I think that when we talk again next Thursday, Alex, in a week's time, as much as we've been able to glean and learn about this team so far, probably a lot more things immediately ahead as far as finding out some weaknesses and maybe issues when it comes to playing Big Ten caliber teams later in the year that Indiana and Coach Miller will focus in on.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago State was clearly one of the worst teams in Division One. I think Montana State is going to be a little bit, a lot more organized and a lot, just a better team. Now, I don't think they're a team that has a chance to beat Indiana, but it's not going to be just a walk in the park like Chicago State was. Indiana could have basically shown up and put anyone on the court and beat Chicago State. That's not necessarily the case with Montana State. Marquette next week, next week's going to tell us a lot, not just because Marquette, then they go to Arkansas and play on a Sunday. That's, from talking to people that have covered a lot of SEC basketball, even when Arkansas is not great, which they're not going to be that good this year, it's a tough place to play. It's a young team going on the road. That'll be an interesting test. So, it's important that they come out, I think, tomorrow and play sharp basketball against Montana State, because this is really the last quote-unquote tune-up before the schedule beefs up next week. And after that, things are going to start coming fast. Before you know it, it'll be at the end of the month. They got to go to Duke. They've got Louisville. They've got Butler. So this is a non-conference schedule that's challenging. I think we're going to learn a lot about this team, obviously, though, next week with Marquette, who's one of the best offensive teams in the country. They have one of the best guards in the country, Marcus Howard. You talk about, seeing where the guards are, Romeo and Rob in particular. They're going to have their hands full with Marcus Howard next week. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Alex Bozich, our guest. Alex, one of the great features about your site is the podcast On the Brink, a weekly or so podcast that is released via your website. Mm-hmm. Interesting guest, interesting questions you asked John Crispin of Big Ten Network. I was listening to this earlier this morning. One of the questions you posed to him, and I'll, of course you can go to InsideTheHall.com to listen if you want to hear the full thing, but you ask him how the Big Ten's lack of a relationship with ESPN has driven the narrative about the league nationally. Explain a little bit about that question and what John's response was in your recent podcast. I thought that was an interesting topic that probably needs a little explanation for the average listener.
Well, the one thing I love about John, and I've known him now for several years, just getting to know him from calling IU games, and he's been gracious enough to come on our podcast a couple times a season. I keep in contact with him regularly. Just a great guy who has a ton of enthusiasm for the game. But the thing I like about him is he doesn't sugarcoat things, and I think he made a really good point about, the Big Ten right now, I think, is kind of dogged a little bit nationally, and John brought up the point that, ESPN's not really one of the primary rights holders now for Big Ten games. And, what we saw the other night, obviously Duke was very impressive, and we were hearing a ton about Cam Reddish, R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson. Those kids are great. Not to take anything away from them, but, we just don't hear much nationally about the Big Ten going into the season. And I think he made a good point that part of the reason for that is how ESPN kind of drives the narrative a lot of times nationally. And, it's going to be interesting to see how, if Indiana gets off to a really good start and Romeo's putting up big numbers, and, how maybe that changes. Is the team going to get a little bit more coverage from, obviously ESPN's kind of the worldwide leader in sports, self-proclaimed, but everyone, tunes in there for games and the like. And just to kind of see who's getting the hype on the morning after shows and talked about. And, I just thought it was an interesting point that John brought up about that, one that a lot of people maybe don't think about. And, I basically asked him about the league being down, and he kind of opened it up to an ESPN type of rant. So, I, as you said, Matt, I encourage people to go listen to it. A lot of guys are afraid to say things, but I don't think John's ever been afraid to give his opinion, and just a really insightful, candid guy who I've really enjoyed getting to know and talking to over the years.
Let's talk about the Big Ten for just a moment. Ohio State led by as many as 16 points last night. Their lead cut to 4 in the final minute, but they were able to go on the road down in Cincinnati and win. First time that those teams had had an on-site game between each other in 97 years. Just one example of an early Big Ten team playing in a game of interest. Your thoughts now that this season is underway on some early things in the conference and teams you'll be looking at in some of their non-conference games to get a better read for what the Big Ten standings might look like here down the road.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great win for Ohio State. And I think if you're a Big Ten fan and you want more teams to get in the tournament, that's the kind of result last night that you root for, right? Because the better everyone else is in the league, you know, the more because you know, when we get into league play, everyone's going to beat each other up. So anything that the league can do in non-conference to win road games, to win neutral site games, to win against good teams is going to obviously help the numbers as the season goes along. I'm just interested to see what kind of some of these middle-of-the-pack teams, or at least the ones that have been projected, like a Penn State. They beat supposedly West Virginia in a secret scrimmage, which is a surprising result to me. Another team that I'm really kind of curious to see how they fare in non-conference play is Purdue, because they have a fantastic player in Carson Edwards, but, you know, what do they have around him to surround him with? I don't just know Jel Eastern, a guy that a lot of people would kind of pegged as a potential breakout guy this year, didn't play too well in their first game. So mainly I'm just watching, I think if you're a fan of Big Ten basketball, you root for Big Ten teams this time of year because overall it helps the league. It helps that perception, as much as it, for an IU fan, as hard as it might be to root for a Purdue or an Ohio State in non-conference play, I think ultimately you want those teams to be as good as possible so that when you do beat them, in league play, it means more and kind of helps bolster your resume. I think this is a year where the Big Ten is going to have a chance to get 7 or so teams in the NCAA tournament. So this is kind of where they lay the groundwork. You know, we'll have the ACC Big Ten Challenge. We've got the Gavitt Games next week. It's important for the Big Ten as a whole to do well in those events to kind of build up some stature for the league before league play begins.
Alex Bozich inside the hall. He's with us Thursdays here on the Hoosier Report. Alex, thanks for the chat. We'll do it again next week.
All right, thank you, Matt. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Stop into CC Power Sports, locations in Clarksville and across the river in southern Jefferson County for parts, vehicle sales, and all servicing needs for street and off-road motorcycles, side-by-sides, ATVs, and personal watercraft. Summer is here, or actually, summer is not here. Summer has gone to the wayside, but CC Power Sports still there to help you out and get the fun underway at CC Power Sports, who again brings us Alex Bozich each Thursday on the program. We'll head to a break. We'll come back with Matt Weaver. We'll switch gears and do a little IU football before we close things out here on this Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We're back. This final segment, we'll be joined by Matt Weaver of Pigs.com. Matt is football writer for Pigs.com and with us to preview IU and Maryland this weekend. Matt, a big one for Indiana. There's no question the rest of the way we can set these games up with almost the same sentence, bowl eligibility on the line.
Yeah, and it's going to become kind of like Groundhog Day. I mean, the last, even if you go back to the first bowl game in 2015, they had to kind of, their backs were against the wall and had to win their last two or two out of three, something like that. And again in 16, and then obviously last year, and they fell short, obviously, in the bucket game, and now you got to win two out of three. And,
None of them will be easy, but the last two, obviously the Michigan game is going to be next to impossible because they're looking like one of the best teams in the country. And then Purdue's playing awfully well, so that's going to be a very difficult game. So, but you got to get the first one. You got to get the first one this week to even have a chance for to get to number six. So, like you said, it's a huge game.
Matt, Maryland comes in with a 5-4 record. Their season obviously has been highlighted by some of the off-the-court festivities, just terrible stuff that has continued into the season with a coach being reinstated and then let go about 24 hours or less later. And, of course, the worst of all, a player in the offseason passes away in the middle of early season workouts. So many things, and just when you thought that maybe the thing was coming to some closure at Maryland, that a week ago, the coach back, the coach gone, you got to wonder how in the world that affects a football team going through such uncertainty even in the same week. So Maryland has had its share of off-the-field issues to deal with, in addition to challenges on the field as well.
Yeah. You know, they've got some talented players. I mean, you know, the one thing to say for DJ Durkin, you know, Tech obviously did some things that were fireable, no doubt about it. But as a recruiter, him and his staff have done a good job there. The couple of years that he was there, they recruited well. They've got some talented players. But yeah, the off the field, and I think, you know, I watched them against Michigan State, and they just kind of looked like, I think it's taken its toll. Now we'll see if maybe they're kind of rejuvenated for this week, but I think it's just taken its toll. I mean, it's really unfortunate for the players there, because obviously they had nothing to do with any of that, but they're the ones who have to deal with it and have to probably answer questions from a lot of the media all year long. And it's just probably, I think after a while, it probably just kind of wears on you and beats you down a little bit. So, but they have 5 wins. And they, after Indiana, they've got Penn State and Ohio State. I can't remember what order that is. I might have that in the wrong order. But those are their final two games. So this is a big one for them. I mean, they probably got to look at it like, hey, we need to win this one to really get bowl eligibility, because if we don't, it's going to be tough to win one of those last two games.
Matt Weaver, Pigs.com. With me, we're talking IU football. Matt, noon kickoff, is that right, Saturday?
Yes, it is. I'm on the Big Ten Network, noon kickoff.
And IU Maryland, of course, the matchup. Lots of changes with this IU team as well. Michael Penix, ACL tear, out for the season. Reese Taylor now the backup quarterback, of course, Mr. Football from Indianapolis, Ben Davis. What are you most interested to see in an off week? Let me add that in, a bye week for IU football. What are some things you're most interested to see this Indiana team do when they get back on the field, things you'll be watching here in this game?
Well, I think first and foremost, which Indiana team will we see? They've been kind of Jekyll and Hyde the last few weeks. I mean, you know, if you go back to Iowa, that just was, we talked about it, you know, after that. That was an incredibly flat performance. Just didn't have a lot of energy. And then I believe after that they played Penn State, and it was different. They played well enough to win. They just, you know, special teams killed them. I mean, it pretty much lost them the game. And then the Minnesota game was kind of like Iowa all over again. It just, they were flat and really didn't start to play, in my opinion, until it was 31-9 in the fourth quarter. Then they made that comeback. But so first off, you know, do they come out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder? I mean, they need to come out with like their backs are against the wall, because their backs are against the wall. And then as far as the actual execution, I mean, offensively, you know, I mean, we've seen what they are, but can you maybe, you know, Maryland has, they've been good against the pass. They've got, I think they're leading the Big Ten in interceptions. I think they've gotten at least one in every game, but can they, you know, can you take some shots on them? They've been a little susceptible to deep balls in Indiana. That's not been their forte, but can you take some shots? And then can you run the ball? Then defensively, the whole game to me is going to come down, can you stop Maryland's run game? Because if you can, you got a real good shot to win. They are not a good throwing team at all. So if you can slow them down in the run game, you've got a great shot to win that game. And then special teams, they got really good kick returners. Special teams are going to have to be better this week.
Matt, if Indiana football does not find its way to bowl eligibility and doesn't make a bowl game this season, what type of impact does that have on a program that has had some bowl buzz, has been able to get to some bowl games, not last year, but in recent years? What type of impact negatively with recruiting, as you see Purdue hitting the state harder and Jeff Brohm's stock taking off, what type of impact would another non-bowl season have for this IU football program? Is it major? Is it minor? Is it concerning? Is it part of the process of rebuilding? Where do you see it, if that is what ends up happening?
I do think it's a little concerning. I mean, because obviously it looked like the program had momentum. You went to two straight bowls, and then it would be 2 years in a row, of not making bowl games. So I think there is, you know, some concern. You're just gonna have to overcome in recruiting, and that's what they're paid to do. But it's tough. I mean, you can only spend it so much, and obviously the worst thing that's really happened to IU these last 2 years is obviously, other than not making bowl games, is that Purdue has done a complete 180 with their program. I mean, they were absolutely in the dumpster a couple years ago, and Jeff Brohm has done a terrific job, and now they're getting a lot of buzz in state and with recruits in the area, and deservedly so. I mean, their offense is exciting. They're beating, what they did to Ohio State, and then, you know, the win over Iowa was impressive. And, you know, they have a chance to win the Big Ten West. I mean, they have a legit shot to win that division. And say what you want about that division being weaker or whatever, that's still a feather in their cap. And it's the timing for Indiana couldn't have been worse, where they've kind of slipped a little bit. But it's, you know, if they don't make a bowl, we'll see what happens with the recruiting class. I mean, the early signing period, I think it helps you a little bit keep your class together, because guys, by the time the season's over, they don't have a lot of time to look around. But, you know, you never know. I mean, nothing's final until a guy signs on the dotted line. So, hopefully they don't lose anybody. They had one guy decommit, Michael Cartwright, but that was more of a mutual parting of the ways. I think Indiana was kind of looking maybe to upgrade the O-line position, and he was a little bit disappointing this year on film. So, but other than that, everybody seems to be solid, and hopefully that stays the case.
Matt, let's look ahead for just a second. You mentioned after Maryland, it's Michigan for IU, and they have found themselves in one of those top four spots for the college football playoff rankings, at least at this point. I saw ESPN a few days ago had them at the number four spot. They kind of have quietly and methodically made their way to being a really sound and a really good football team this year.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, their D coordinator, Don Brown, I mean, there's a lot of good D coordinators in college football. He might be the best. He is a terrific coach. He did it at Boston College before he came to Michigan. And obviously, I mean, he was doing it with, you know, lesser talent at Boston College. And then you give him the guys that Michigan gets, the Rashawn Garys and Devin Bush and all the guys. I mean, I can name them on and on and on. They're just loaded. Chase Winovich, loaded with really good players. And I think the best way to describe a good defense is when you call them salty. And Michigan's defense is salty. I mean, they are really, really good. They're tough. I mean, it's going to be a brutal game for Indiana offensively, just because they're just so hard to move the ball on. I'm not saying they can't, but it's, you have to play not perfect, but man, you have to play pretty close to it, because they are so sound. I mean, they're athletic, they're tough, they're physical, but then they're well coached. And that when you get good athletes who are really well coached and do their job, that's when you get great defenses, and that's what they have. And I think Michigan's going to win out. I'll be the first to admit it. I was wrong, dead wrong on them. I had a third or fourth of the Big Ten East, and it's because offensively I wasn't sure. They had to prove it to me, and they proved it to me. Shea Patterson's really helped them, his ability to run around, and he's played better. And I think offensively they've been better. But I think they're going to go into Ohio State in the last week. The one thing Indiana might have is maybe they're looking ahead when you play them. But even then, their talent is so good, it's still going to be hard. But they're playing well, and give them credit, because Harbaugh's taking a lot of flack up there, but he's got them playing well this year.
Matt, let's take a look ahead one more week while we're at it. Purdue to close out the season on November 24th. It is in Bloomington. And you talk about, you don't know what IU team is going to show up this weekend to take on Maryland. You don't know what Purdue team is going to show up either. Is it going to be the team that beat Ohio State and then had a nice win over Iowa this weekend? Or is it going to be the team that in between those wins has had a disappointing game or two? They have been good at times, and they've been mediocre at times this year as well. Depending on what Purdue team shows up, what IU team shows up, that could be a really, really good game, a really competitive game, a great way to close the season, perhaps with bowl eligibility on the line for Indiana. Or if it's Purdue like they played against Ohio State or Iowa, it could be a tough one, a long day, a long night for Indiana.
Yeah, I think what's worrisome when I look at that matchup, in my opinion, is their strength is obviously throwing the ball. And Indiana, especially the last few weeks, is really – take out the Penn State game, they did a pretty good job. But Iowa, they struggled to stop the pass. I mean, Minnesota threw the ball all over the yard on him, and that was a guy making his first college start. And then the next week against Illinois, he looked mediocre. So Indiana has really struggled to defend the pass. They're not getting a ton of pressure on the quarterback, and then that makes it tough on your DBs. Obviously, when those two teams meet on the field, the best player on the field is going to be Rondale Moore. I mean, the kid is just flat out a stud, and you're going to have to figure out a way. You can't let Rondale Moore get 12 or 14 catches, which is what he's done in some games this year, and beat you. You're going to have to make somebody else beat you, and the other guys have shown they can. That Terry Wright did against Iowa, so you're going to have to make somebody else beat you when you play Purdue. But it's going to be a tough matchup. You're going to have to figure out a way to get after Blau and try to disrupt him as much as possible.
Matt Weaver, Pigs.com. Before we let you go, Matt, you got a pick for me for the college football playoffs. Who do you see as your champion this year?
Bama looks pretty unbeatable. Now, I mean, Clemson's played well, but, I mean, Bama, they are just a machine. I mean, this is as good as Saban's teams have been. This might be his best one. I mean, I'll say Tua. I don't know how you pronounce his last name, the quarterback. But what a season. I mean, he threw his first pick in, like, game 9 or 10. Just unbelievable. And it's really interesting because usually they're really a running-based offense. But this year, they're just throwing the ball like crazy. And they're really good. The only thing you wonder about is when they play a better team like a Clemson and they get in the fourth quarter, you know, because he hasn't played in a lot of fourth quarters, but he did against LSU. How will he handle that? But I think they're the best team. I would like to see Michigan's defense against their offense. But I just think overall they're the best team in the country. I can't see anybody beating Alabama. They're so good.
Yeah, I agree with you. Matt Weaver, Pigs.com, the football writer for Pigs, at MB_Weaver on Twitter for all kinds of great IU football info, and, of course, Pigs.com as well. Matt, thank you. We'll do it again a couple times in the remainder of this season, and let's hope we're talking into December because it means IU's playing some bowl football.
I appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Matt Weaver, Pigs.com with us, and a great resource for IU football. That's going to wrap things up for this Thursday program. Thank you for being with us. Don't forget, if you miss a segment or a show, we're on SoundCloud. We're on Apple Podcasts. Point your browser to SoundCloud.com/Hoosier Report. Again, SoundCloud.com/Hoosier Report. We'll be back Friday, 11 a.m., to wrap up the week right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison on the Big X Sports Radio.